All right, so today we're diving into something that's been making waves for over a century.
Inductive Bible study.
Yeah, exactly. Inductive Bible study.
A method that's more relevant now than ever, I'd say.
Absolutely. It's all about like stripping away all the extra stuff and getting back to the basics.
Letting the Bible speak for itself, you know.
Right. Just letting those deeper layers of meaning kind of bubble up naturally.
Exactly, because those deeper layers are definitely in there.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
So to kick things off, let's rewind back to the late 1800s.
Okay. Back when top hats and petticoats were all the rage.
Yeah, something like that. So there was this Hebrew professor named William Rainey Harper.
Quite a name, isn't it?
It is. And he noticed something really interesting about his students.
What's that?
Well, he was teaching all these lectures on like biblical criticism, the historical context, and all that.
The usual academic stuff.
Yeah, but his students, they were practically snoring through it.
Oh no. Not very inspiring.
Right. But then he had this idea, why not have them just study entire books of the Bible directly?
Just dive right in.
Exactly. And boom,
Oh.
it was like someone flipped a switch.
They came alive.
Totally. They were suddenly engaged, asking questions, debating. It was incredible.
That's the power of letting the text speak for itself.
I know, right? And this wasn't just some random experiment either.
No, it wasn't.
One of Harper's students, Wilbur W. White, saw the potential of this approach and he ran with it.
Spreading inductive Bible study from classrooms to churches, even to India.
Wow, talk about global impact.
And its influence didn't stop there. Even big name scholars like Brevard Childs started taking notice.
So this wasn't just some fringe movement. It was a legitimate shift in how people were engaging with the Bible.
Exactly. And that's what makes this historical backstory so important.
It shows how inductive Bible study really shook things up, you know, challenged the status quo.
It was a radical departure from that dry academic approach that dominated biblical studies at the time.
And more importantly, it put the power of interpretation back into the hands of everyday people.
It was a way of saying, hey, you don't need a PhD to understand the Bible.
You can discover its truth for yourself.
Exactly.
Now, I think it's important to consider why we should even care about this stuff.
Right. Why does understanding the Bible really matter?
Well, think about the early church in Antioch.
Antioch, a city known for its diversity and complexity.
Exactly. It was like a melting pot of cultures and ideas.
And it was there that the disciples were first called Christians.
Wow, in that context of all that diversity, they needed something to unify them.
A strong shared identity.
And they found that in the scriptures.
They found it through deep, meaningful engagement with the text.
So it's not just about personal enrichment, right?
No, not at all.
Understanding the Bible has implications for how we live in community, how we navigate this crazy world.
How we communicate our faith in a way that makes sense to others.
It affects everything.
And that brings us to another crucial assumption.
Okay, lay it on me.
Every Christian minister is, in a sense, a professional Bible interpreter.
What do you mean by professional?
Well, I don't necessarily mean they have a fancy degree or anything, but guiding others towards a deeper understanding of the Bible is absolutely central to their calling.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's the core of what they do.
But hold on a second.
What's up?
Does that mean we have to completely ignore our own experiences and insights?
Oh, that's a great question.
I mean, we all come to the Bible with our own baggage, right?
Absolutely. We don't come to the text as blank slates.
Yo, we've got our own experiences, our own cultural lenses.
And those things definitely shape how we understand the Bible.
So how do we balance that with letting the text speak for itself?
That's where humility comes in.
Okay.
Inductive Bible study acknowledges that we don't come to the text as blank slates,
Right.
but the key is to be aware of those influences.
Our biases and preconceived notions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we can be as objective as possible in our interpretation.
So it's not about erasing our own perspectives, it's about being aware of them.
Precisely.
Okay, I'm starting to see how this all fits together.
Me too.
This historical backdrop, this understanding of the Bible's importance for both individuals and the church.
And this recognition that we need to approach the text with both humility and careful attention.
It's like setting the stage for a really powerful encounter with the text.
Exactly.
So what's next? Where do we go from here?
Well, a fundamental principle of inductive Bible study
Okay.
is that our methods should match the nature of the Bible itself.
That makes sense.
The Bible isn't just some random collection of sayings or abstract
Right,
concepts.
it's a story.
It's a beautifully woven tapestry of history, literature, and theology.
Wow, I love that. A tapestry.
Each of those elements influences how we read and interpret the text.
So we can't just ignore those elements, right?
Nope. we need to take them into account.
Okay, so let's unpack that a bit.
Sounds good.
First, we've got this overarching historical narrative.
Real events, real people, grounded in specific times and places.
We can't just pretend that doesn't matter when we're trying to understand a passage.
Exactly.
And then there's the literary aspect.
Right. We're not dealing with raw data here.
It's not a science textbook.
Nope. We're dealing with stories, poetry, parables, letters.
All these different forms of communication with their own rules and nuances.
It's like a symphony of literary styles.
I love that, a symphony.
Each instrument playing its part.
So we need to listen carefully to each part, right?
Absolutely.
It's like if you were reading Shakespeare, you wouldn't just read the lines at face value, right?
Of course not.
Yeah.
You consider the language, the metaphors, the historical context.
Exactly. It's the same with the Bible.
Precisely.
And then, of course, there's the theological dimension.
Right. The Bible's ultimate purpose is to reveal God.
To show us who he is, what he's like.
And what his plans are for humanity.
We can't lose sight of that as we're studying the text.
Absolutely.
But what about books like Song of Solomon or Esther?
What about them?
They seem kind of far removed from theology, you know?
That's a good point.
What are we supposed to do with those?
Well, even those books in their own unique ways point back to God. Yeah, think about it. Song of Solomon, in its celebration of love and desire.
Okay.
It reflects the beauty and goodness of God's creation.
Hmm. I hadn't thought of it like that.
And while God isn't explicitly mentioned in Esther,
right,
his providence is definitely at work behind the scenes, orchestrating events for the good of his people.
So we can't just write those books off as irrelevant?
Nope. They each contribute to the bigger picture.
Okay. That's a fresh perspective I hadn't considered before.
I'm glad to hear it.
So we're not just doing a historical analysis or literary critique.
We're doing both and more.
We're looking for that deeper theological meaning that runs through the entire Bible.
Exactly.
And that's what sets inductive Bible study apart from other approaches.
Approaches that might prioritize historical reconstruction or comparisons with other religions.
Right. This method is rooted in the belief that the Bible is God's word.
And our goal is to understand what he's communicating to us through it.
It's like a conversation with God.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
So it's not just about accumulating knowledge.
It's about encountering God.
Deepening our faith and letting the Bible shape our understanding of the world.
That's the heart of it.
Okay, I'm all in.
Yeah.
But how do we actually go about doing this?
That's where the inductive part comes in.
Okay. Spill the beans.
It's about drawing conclusions from the text itself.
Okay.
Rather than imposing our own preconceived notions on it.
So we have to let go of our biases.
As much as possible, yes.
And how do we do that?
It all starts with careful observation.
Observation. You mean just reading the words?
Well, it's more than just passively reading.
Okay.
It's about becoming an active reader, like a detective searching for clues.
Ooh, I like that, a detective.
You're looking for patterns, repetitions, keywords, literary devices.
Anything that stands out.
Exactly.
So it's about slowing down, paying attention, and noticing things we might miss if we're just skimming.
Precisely.
It's like those Where's Waldo books.
Uh-huh. Yeah, kind of.
You have to scan that crowded scene for tiny details.
And here we're searching for the nuggets of truth hidden within the text.
I love that analogy.
It captures the excitement of discovery.
Because finding those nuggets is incredibly rewarding.
It's like striking gold.
This is making me realize how much I've been missing in my own Bible reading.
Really?
I often rush through a passage just to check it off my to-do list.
We've all been there.
But I'm starting to see that there's so much more to discover if we just slow down and pay attention.
It's like the difference between glancing at a painting in a museum,
yeah,
and really taking the time to study the brushstrokes, the colors, the composition.
The more you look, the more you see.
Exactly.
And that's what makes inductive Bible study so exciting.
It truly is.
It's an adventure, a journey of discovery where we get to uncover the hidden treasures of God's word.
It's a way of engaging with the Bible that keeps us on our toes.
Challenges our assumptions.
And transforms our hearts and minds.
I'm hooked. Tell me more.
Oh. All right, let's continue our deep dive in part two.
Can't wait. See you there.
See ya.
All right, so we've laid some serious groundwork here. Understanding inductive Bible study, its history, the core principles, why it matters. But now I'm kind of itching to know.
To put it into practice.
Yeah, exactly. How do we actually do this thing? Where do we even begin?
That's where the rubber meets the road, my friend. Inductive Bible study. It's all about letting the text speak for itself.
Okay.
And that starts with careful observation.
Okay, but observing is just reading the words,
right?
What makes that so special in this context?
It's about becoming an active reader. Not just letting the words wash over you.
Okay.
You got to be like a detective searching for clues.
Ooh, I like that. A detective.
Instead of passively absorbing the words, you're actively looking for patterns, repetitions, keywords, literary devices, anything that kind of jumps out at you.
So it's like becoming a textual sleuth.
Exactly. You got it.
We're searching for those hidden treasures of meaning that might be easily missed on a casual read-through.
That's a great way to put it.
So we're not just reading. We're digging deeper.
And as you observe, you gotta record your findings.
Okay, how do we do that?
You might underline keywords, circle repeated phrases, jot down questions in the margins, anything that helps you interact with the text and make it come alive.
This reminds me of those Where's Waldo books.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I see it.
You have to scan that crowded scene for tiny details.
But here, instead of Waldo, we're searching for those nuggets of truth hidden within the text.
And just like finding Waldo, it's incredibly rewarding when you uncover one of those textual nuggets.
It's a feeling of discovery, a sense of accomplishment.
Okay, so we've observed the text, we've highlighted the key details, we've jotted down our questions.
What's next?
Yeah, what's the next step in this detective work?
That's where interpretation comes in. We move from simply observing the text to understanding its meaning.
Okay.
We start piecing together those observations, looking for connections, and asking, what is the author trying to communicate here? What's the main point?
It's like assembling a jigsaw puzzle.
Yes, exactly.
We've got all these individual pieces from our observation, and now we got to figure out how they fit together to form the bigger picture.
And as we interpret, we can't forget about the historical context.
Right. Got to put on those history hats.
Exactly. We ask questions like, what was going on in the world when this text was written? What were the cultural norms? What issues was the author addressing?
So we're not imposing our own 21st century understanding on the text.
Nope. We're just trying to step back in time and see it through their eyes.
It's like trying to understand Shakespeare without knowing anything about Elizabethan England.
Exactly. You'd miss so much.
The nuance is the subtext.
We need to immerse ourselves in the world of the text to truly grasp its meaning.
And we also need to consider the literary genre.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Is it poetry, narrative prophecy, a letter? Each genre has its own unique conventions and ways of communicating.
Right. A psalm is going to be read differently than a historical account.
And a parable is going to have a different layer of meaning than a straightforward teaching.
Exactly. We got to be sensitive to those nuances.
And as we're interpreting, we're always asking ourselves, how does this passage fit into the larger story of the Bible?
Right. How does it connect to everything else?
What does it reveal about God's character and his plan for humanity?
Those are the big questions.
Okay. I'm starting to see how inductive Bible study is more than just a technique. It's a mindset, a way of approaching the text with both intellectual rigor and spiritual sensitivity.
It's a holistic approach.
But I'll be honest, I'm still a little fuzzy on how this inductive part actually works.
Okay, sure.
Can you give us an example of how this plays out in practice?
Absolutely. Let's take a look at a familiar passage.
Yeah.
The parable of the Good Samaritan in Luke chapter 10.
Classic.
Now, we could just read the story and say, okay, it's about being kind to those in need. But if we want to approach it inductively.
Then what?
Then we start by observing the details.
All right, let's put on our detective hats and dive into those details. What jumps out at you when you read this parable?
Well, first I noticed the question that prompts the parable.
Okay, the context.
A lawyer asks Jesus, who is my neighbor?
He's trying to trap Jesus, right?
Well, maybe, but I think he's also trying to justify himself to limit his responsibility to others.
And Jesus, being the master teacher that he is, responds with a story that completely challenges those assumptions.
That's Jesus for ya. Always subverting expectations.
So right off the bat, we see that Jesus is using this story to confront a specific mindset, a way of thinking that tries to categorize people and create boundaries between us and them.
Exactly. He's breaking down those walls.
Okay, so what else do we notice?
Well, then, as we continue observing, we notice the specific characters. Jesus chooses a priest, a Levite, and a Samaritan.
Okay, those are some interesting choices.
Right, because in the cultural context of that time, priests and Levites were considered the most religious, the most likely to show compassion.
But they both pass by the injured man.
They do. It's surprising, isn't it?
It's kind of counterintuitive. You'd expect them to be the heroes of the story.
That's where understanding the historical context and the literary genre can help us.
Okay, fill me in.
See, Jesus is using irony here.
I love a good dose of irony.
He's turning expectations upside down to make a point. He's challenging the religious elite.
Exposing their hypocrisy.
Exactly. And their failure to live up to their own standards.
Ouch. That's got a sting.
So the choice of characters is deliberate.
It's meant to provoke a reaction.
To challenge our assumptions about who is truly righteous and who isn't.
And then we come to the Samaritan.
Ah, yes, the Samaritan.
Now, in that cultural context, Samaritans were despised by the Jews, right?
They were considered heretics, outsiders, the last people you'd expect to show mercy.
But it's the Samaritan who stops.
He sees the injured man and he's moved with compassion.
He goes above and beyond to care for him.
He doesn't hesitate. He doesn't ask questions. He just acts.
And this reversal of expectations, it completely drives home Jesus's point.
Our neighbor is not limited to those who look like us, think like us, or worship like us.
Our neighbor is anyone in need.
Period.
Wow, this is blowing my mind. By simply observing the details, considering the historical context, and paying attention to the literary techniques, we've uncovered so much meaning in this parable.
It's amazing what we can discover when we slow down and pay attention.
And we haven't even gotten to the application yet.
That's for next time.
All right, can't wait. But for now, what stands out to you about this example of the Good Samaritan?
What strikes me is how inductive Bible study helps us to see the Bible with fresh eyes.
It's like we're peeling back the layers.
Uncovering the depth and richness that's been there all along.
It's like we've been reading the Bible in black and white.
And now we're seeing it in full color.
Exactly. It's a whole new world.
It's about moving beyond surface level reading and engaging with the text in a way that transforms our hearts and minds.
I'm already starting to see the world differently.
That's the power of the word.
To think differently about my own assumptions and biases.
It challenges us to become more like Christ.
Okay, I'm feeling inspired, but I also have a question.
Shoot.
How do we actually apply this stuff to our lives? I mean, it's one thing to understand a passage, but it's another thing to actually live it out.
That's the million-dollar question. Let's dive into that in part three.
Can't wait. See you there.
Sounds good.
Welcome back, Deep Divers. We've journeyed through the history and principles of inductive Bible study. Even took a stab at interpreting the parable of the Good Samaritan. But now, the big question. How do we take these amazing insights and actually live them out?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? It's not enough to just understand the text. We want to let it transform our hearts, our minds, our actions.
Okay, but I gotta admit, sometimes I feel a bit lost when it comes to application.
Yeah.
I get what the passage means, but then I'm like, okay, now what?
I hear you. It can feel like a big leap from understanding to application.
It does.
But remember, application isn't about forcing the text to fit our own agendas.
Okay.
Or trying to come up with a list of rules to follow.
So it's not about making the Bible say what we want it to say.
Exactly. It's about letting the text speak to us, challenge us, guide us.
It's about submitting to its authority and allowing it to shape us.
Beautifully said. And remember, application isn't a one-size-fits-all formula.
Okay.
It'll look different for each person and for each passage.
So how do we even know where to start?
Well, sometimes it might involve changing a behavior, confessing a sin, reaching out to someone in need.
So it's not always about doing something.
Right. Sometimes it's about being something, about becoming more Christ-like in our thoughts, attitudes, and motivations.
Sometimes the application might be a shift in perspective.
Exactly.
A renewed commitment to a particular value or a deeper understanding of God's character.
You got it.
Okay. Starting to see the nuances here.
Yeah.
But how do we make sure our application is actually rooted in the text?
Right. We don't want to just come up with random applications that have nothing to do with the passage.
Exactly. How do we avoid that?
That's where all that work we did in observation and interpretation comes into play.
Okay.
Our application should always flow naturally from our understanding of the passage's meaning.
So if we're studying the parable of the Good Samaritan,
yeah,
our application shouldn't be something random like, I need to start volunteering at a soup kitchen.
Right. It should be directly tied to the main point of the parable, which is about showing compassion to anyone in need.
Regardless of their background or social standing?
Precisely. It's about asking ourselves, how does this passage challenge my preconceived notions? How does it call me to love my neighbor more sacrificially? How does it invite me to see the world through God's eyes?
This is so practical and helpful. It's like we're finally bridging the gap between head knowledge and heart transformation.
That's the goal.
And it's not a one-time thing, right?
Nope. Application is an ongoing process.
It's a lifelong journey of becoming more and more conformed to the image of Christ.
Amen to that.
Okay. I'm feeling inspired and ready to put all this into practice, but I gotta admit, I'm also feeling a bit overwhelmed. Are there any tools or resources that can help us along the way?
Absolutely. One resource that can be incredibly helpful is a good study Bible.
Wait, study Bibles? Isn't that kind of like cheating? I thought inductive Bible study was all about letting the Bible speak for itself.
That's a common misconception. While it's true that we want to avoid simply parroting someone else's interpretation, study Bibles can be valuable tools for gaining a deeper understanding of the text.
So it's like having a conversation with scholars and theologians who've dedicated their lives to studying the Bible.
Exactly.
They can offer insights and perspectives that we might not have considered on our own.
Think of study Bibles as guides, not dictators.
Okay.
They can point you in the right direction, but ultimately you're the one wrestling with the text and forming your own conclusions.
That makes sense. Yeah. Are there any other resources you'd recommend?
Concordances can be helpful for tracing keywords and themes throughout a book or passage.
Okay.
Commentaries can provide valuable insights into the historical context and cultural background.
Mm-hmm.
And there are even some fantastic websites and apps specifically designed for inductive Bible study.
Wow, technology and Bible study, who knew?
These digital tools can make the process of observation and interpretation even more interactive and engaging. Well, you can highlight verses, create notes, compare different translations, even collaborate with others in your study.
That's so cool. It's like having a whole library and a study group at my fingertips.
And don't forget about the power of community.
Oh, yeah.
Find a study partner, join a small group, seek out a mentor who can guide you in the process.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's so much easier to stay motivated and accountable when we're doing this together.
Absolutely. We weren't meant to do this alone.
This has been an amazing deep dive. I'm feeling so encouraged and equipped to engage with the Bible in a way that is both intellectually stimulating and spiritually transformative.
Me too. It's been a joy to explore this method with you.
We encourage you to pick up your Bibles, dust off those commentaries, and embark on your own adventure of inductive Bible study. You might just be amazed by the treasures you uncover.
Happy digging.
And that's a wrap for this deep dive. Thanks for joining us.